No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chat with Kelly McRae. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For more information, or to read a transcript, go to nosurfmusic.com.
Thank you both for stopping by.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it, especially since it was on such short notice.
Yeah.
And this, as it ends up, will be the first of our Burning River Fireside Chats.
Nice.
So I'm glad that you could actually help us start this out.
Cool.
That sounds great.
So you are currently driving through Ohio,
going
from Pittsburgh to Michigan.
Yes.
And making a little stopover here in beautiful Kent, so you can do this. And you've been on tour for how long now?
We've been on the road for about 3 months now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's that going for you?
It's going great so far. It's been amazing. We left New York the last weekend of February, started in Boston, and since then we've played about 50 shows and driven like 12,000 miles.
Yeah.
You know, all the way from Boston to Austin, Texas, to the southeast, Florida, back up the East Coast, and now we're hoping to make it all the way out to California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the plan. If the van will last that long.
Don't say that.
Yeah. You don't want to jinx it. That's the last thing you want to do. Speaking of which, I did ride over here in the lovely VW van for which your tour is named.
Yep.
And you have a sponsor now, and I know that you're contractually obligated to throw a little something in, but it really is awesome because anybody who supports independent music is
terrific.
Agreed.
Totally cool. Agreed.
So why don't you go ahead and just tell us how that came about and who's sponsoring it.
Sure. So we are sponsored by a company called True Lemon, and they basically take like a lemon or a lime or an orange, and it's like all natural product, and it's like a powdered lemon basically in a packet. So their whole motto is like live true, and so I contacted them about the idea of sponsoring this tour and doing a sort of a little guerrilla marketing campaign for them, and they were totally up for it, so we started this sort of unusual partnership that has been amazing.
Awesome. Well, like I said, anything that can keep an independent artist working is totally all right in No Surf's book, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, as you said, you've been on the road for about 3 months.
Yeah.
And I want to get a little bit into your history before that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
You grew up in a small town in Mississippi, I do believe.
Yep.
And I feel like, especially on your first album, that had a lot to do with forming the basis of your music and your lyrics. So tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up down there, some of your experiences, and how you got into music, and how those experiences have affected what you've written.
Sure. So I grew up in a little town in Mississippi, and I don't know, what it's like for kids growing up anymore, but back then we basically just had free reign. Like, we just, my mom sent us off in the morning in the summertime, and we came back for dinner, So we lived by a lake, and we lived by some woods, and so we basically just spent the whole time running around building forts and writing plays and putting on neighborhood boxing tournaments and such. So I think that...
Were you a contender?
I wanted to be, I was such a tomboy, and I had two brothers, and we would literally put like bricks in a red wagon and tie a rope around our waist and like run down the street training, So, but I was just a little thing that wanted so badly. I was actually notorious for breaking all of our sports equipment because I would get so angry that I would never win. It was a really beautiful place to grow up. It was just gorgeous and green, and like I said, we basically had a lot of freedom. And also, it's a university town, so we also had access to really great teachers. So growing up, I got to take piano and dance and voice and all these things. And the teachers there were amazing, basically because they were connected to the university. So, and you got to do the whole, like, big fish in a small pond thing. So... you know, all during high school, and, you know, I got to be in all the plays and all of that. So it's sort of, I just got a ton of experience and a ton of encouragement, which I think once you go off into, like, the real world, and it's, like, 10 years later, and you're still, like, doing the thing, you know, to have come from that level of support and encouragement is always amazing, you know. But I also kind of always knew that I wanted to end up somewhere like Brooklyn. I never quite felt like Mississippi was the, I don't know, I just felt like odd man out a lot for some reason. And so I actually studied acting. I thought that I wanted to be an actress. I had never considered music as a profession, even though I'd like grown up singing and stuff in church and all the three-part harmonies of that. So I went to school at SMU in Dallas, Texas for acting. And then my junior year, I had to take an arts elective class. And so I had this guitar that I had never played. And I was like, well, shit, I'll just finally learn how to play this guitar, you know. And it was a classical guitar class, and I was actually pretty terrible at it. But once they taught us three chords, I was totally obsessed. You know, I spent every free moment that I had writing songs and playing and singing, and my poor roommates at the time heard so many terrible, terrible songs, you know. But yeah, pretty much from that moment on, it was sort of like, I always liked acting, and I even probably thought that I loved it, but once I started music, it was very clear to me, like, oh no, it's like, you know, it's like dating the guy who you kind of like and meeting the dude that you love, you know. It's like, oh right, that's the difference, you know, like, so, yeah, so once I graduated, I pretty much knew that even though I had this acting degree, that I wanted to do music.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about some of those early songs, which I'm sure weren't as horrible as you think they were. But
They were pretty terrible, actually. I still have the demos.
Oh, yeah? Well, this is the beautiful thing. Everybody goes through a growing process. But what were some of the first things that you wrote about?
Oh, wow. You know, that's a great question. I wrote a lot. I mean, and this definitely carried over into even my first album, which was, you know, 100 songs later or something. But I wrote a lot about relationships or the lack thereof. That sort of like, I was listening to Patti Griffin like a madwoman. So that like well of loneliness, you know, that she draws from was like so home to me, you know. So there was a lot of that. And songs about growing up in Mississippi, that's always kind of been, you know, those images of that place has always been a theme. So it was actually very similar to my music now, in terms of just relationships and spiritual themes and loneliness themes. And I mean, it's pretty much the same then, just hopefully the quality control has gotten significantly better. So. Okay.
Well, it definitely sounds like you carried a lot of that through to your first album, especially, and later on to the second one. I just want to focus on the first album, Never Be, for just a moment.
Great.
Because I think there's a distinct transition between the two, and you can talk about that a little in a moment. But where were you living when you completed the first one? Were you still in Mississippi then, or were you in Texas?
I was actually in New York City.
Okay,
so the weird thing that happened when I moved to New York was that, well, so I sort of was thinking of it as grad school for songwriting. You know, I tried to just surround myself by songwriters who were better than me.
Right. Fair enough. That's a lot of what the New York experience is like.
Totally.
Just meeting
people. Go to shows all the time. You know, end up in those little corners of bars sharing songs till 4 a.m. And so I was trying to dig pretty deep into, like, what my sound actually was. Like, what my identity as a songwriter was. Because at the time I had this weird, like, you know, Alanis meets like a, you know, theater major singer. You know what I mean? Like, it was this sort of like, and I was really trying to get back to like, what did I sound like when I was 7? And I sang just for the joy of it, you know? And out of that process, it sort of became clear that the things that really resonated with me were the sort of like the Southern, like whether there was like a gospel or a soul or a country kind of vibe, were the things that when I started to write in those veins, that's when I sort of started to write songs that kind of went to that next level of feeling true and feeling just better, you know? So it wasn't until New York City that I really sort of found, you know, like the Mississippi in my music, basically. So I was in Brooklyn when I put out that first album.
Okay.
Never Be, yeah.
And I guess this would be a perfect time to talk about that transition then, because
yeah.
It must have been a huge transition.
Yeah.
You know, just going from your earlier experiences in smaller towns and
totally.
College towns to New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially to Brooklyn, which is, you know, maybe not as densely populated as the city itself, but is so lively and so filled with all sorts of different people. What was that like, just as a person going through that experience?
I really, really loved it. I mean, I almost immediately fell, like, head over heels in love with New York City. And it also is, like, such a kick in the ass, because it's one of these places that forces you... It asks so much from you, both from, like, just an emotional point of view and just, like, a daily interaction with people all the time point of view and a financial point of view, that anything that you sort of put on the back burner in terms of who you are as a person sort of just gets thrown to the front just because you're so raw, especially when you're first transitioning into the city. So it's, like, a combination of, like, these ultimate highs of, like, meeting all these incredible people, these super talented people, learning so much, and also like real lows of being like, can I even survive in this city, you know?
Well, I've spent more than my share of time sleeping on subways, so I know
exactly
what you're talking
totally.
About there.
And I
it's actually more comfortable than you'd think. if you're a heavy sleeper.
You definitely see that.
Oh, come on. But. You guys are living in a van. How are you laughing at me?
Oh, I'm not laughing at you. I was actually thinking
of... Because we used
to
ride those subways all the time.
Sounds horrible.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. But I really loved it. And I was really drawn to that sort of diversity of meeting tons of different people with tons of different ideas about life and everything else. And so it was sort of a feast. I mean, it was really a feast. And I... went for the gusto, you know.
Right.
It was a great time. Yeah.
I think that's why I love New York so much too. It's just, you know, the maelstrom of everything that's constantly going on. There's never a dull moment, and if there is, there's something really wrong with you.
Totally.
Oh,
it's so hard to find that anywhere else. But I guess if it took you getting to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
To find the Mississippi in your first album.
Yeah.
A lot of your second album, mm-hmm. High Rises in Brooklyn, was about, you know, the city itself and especially, you know, Brooklyn, the BQE, walking home late at night from those bars, all of that stuff. Yet it still retains, you know, a lot of that sort of earthy feel. And it's obvious that, you know, you're still who you are no matter where you are.
Right.
What was it like for you, you know, writing about a new place and trying to get those experiences out?
Mm-hmm.
And why did you decide to do so much of it focused on where you were living at the time?
You know, it sort of just happened organically. Like, I definitely did not set out, like, once I finished Never Be, I wasn't like, oh, well, now I'm going to write my Brooklyn album. You know, like, it definitely was just organically sort of came out of the things I was seeing and hearing and where I've lived literally. Like, the BQE was, like, outside of my window, you know? So, and I'd also had a friend who basically, you know, was kind of kicking my ass about, in terms of songwriting, in terms of not relying just on emotions, but really digging into the imagery and, you know, not just sort of being vague, but very, very, very imagery sort of centric in terms of writing. So I was definitely trying to put a lot of those tools to use. Which, you know, that's what was all around me. And I was going through, like, a sort of a terrible relationship. And so that imagery sort of took on, and that sort of rawness and that grittiness of that imagery that you see and the people that you see really sort of started to take on how I was feeling. You know, you sort of reflect back on that. So, that's sort of how it happened. And what I wanted to do was... in some way, like, sonically, try to reflect all of that noise. New York's in sort of a constant state of rumble, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whether it's like the subway or the BQE or the bar that you live on top of, or like somehow reflect both the sort of melancholy that I was in, but also this energy of this city that's constantly kind of moving, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. It just sort of happened that way. Yeah.
Well, I think in that respect, you did a great job, yeah. Because as much as I like your first album, yeah. And several of the songs on it, and we'll get, yeah. to that in a moment, I really think that you grew tremendously as a songwriter on High Rises in Brooklyn. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, like you said, number one, not just relying on pure, yeah. emotion, and some, yeah. of those emotional songs are great,
right.
but you really pulled in so much more experiential stuff, and sort of just the feeling of the city itself,
right.
into your music, which I really think, you know, is amazing. And, you know, you can almost feel the cars going by in the BQE when you talk about
that's
it.
Awesome.
Where exactly did you live at the time?
I lived on the corner of Grand and Marcy. So okay. it's actually, when we moved there, so I was living with like five girls from Texas or something, you know, in true New York style, and like a three-bedroom apartment. But like when we moved, there was nothing on that like block and a half, you know. And now it's like this super hip corner, you know,
right.
like all these like restaurants and bars and stuff. So it's pretty wild to see, you know, to have seen it grown.
I bet your apartment is at least three times as much in rent as it used to be.
You
back
know,
then.
It's funny. I think it's the same. Just
really?
Because it's like that level, that weird pocket of like landlord neglect,
yeah.
that happens sometimes. You can get,
okay.
one of those landlords who's like
special
forgot
situations.
that's one of the 100 places that they own.
Gotcha.
I don't live there anymore, but one of my roommates who was with me at the time still does. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, good for her then.
I know, exactly. But everything else is like three times as
right,
much.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, it's nice to have the guy that never stops by.
Oh, yeah. And you never call because,
right.
you don't want to remind him,
yeah,
that you exist.
He hasn't been,
you know?
To that,
like,
neighborhood in 20,
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that it's starting
he
to gentrify,
that, yeah,
the hipsters
still
want to live
like
there.
It's like a total, like, shithole, you know?
Right, right. Well, like I said, good for her because,
yeah.
that's great. I had a similar situation when I was living in Chinatown.
Yeah.
I was on Broome Street, which,
yeah.
is one street into Chinatown. So all the hipsters were invading from the Lower East Side.
Oh, totally.
But they never caught on because the entire rest of my building was all Chinese folks,
yeah,
and our rent,
yeah.
was beautiful compared,
awesome.
To the rest of it. So
that's awesome.
That's great. That's a,
yeah.
great little story. So I want to move into, real quick, some of your influences too,
yeah,
because,
great.
You know, obviously you've drawn a lot of it from your own personal experiences.
Right.
But everybody has people that influence them.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I've heard you mention a few, but off the top of your head, what would you say your biggest influences have been?
I would say my biggest influences tend to be female singer-songwriters that do have that sort of like roots-centric music, like Gillian Welch and David Rawlings and Patti Griffin. Lucinda Williams is a huge influence. And I want to try to make her even more of an influence, like actively kind of listening to her stuff a lot. And but also grew up listening to like Aretha Franklin all the time, and like you know, Bill Withers, and we listened to a ton of Neil Young, and I grew up listening to Neil Young and a guy named Richard Buckner. I'm just like huge fan of Uncle Tupelo. Yeah, so it's a sort of a combination of like these really strong like female songwriters and just a bunch of other people, soul and country and that sort of thing. But they all tend to be sort of in that like Americana kind of vein. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would say the R&B stuff.
Yeah.
Really, really comes through in your voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, to me, one of the most interesting things about your music is it's, for the most part, very rootsy music, and I'm sure,
right.
even more so when you hear it live with,
yeah.
just the two of you guys, which,
yeah.
I unfortunately have not had the opportunity to do yet, but will one of these days, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But your voice is just so beautiful and bluesy, and I think, do you feel like you got a lot of that listening to those, like, 70s recordings of Aretha Franklin and things,
oh,
like
totally.
That?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I woke up every day in 7th grade and played Aretha Franklin's Greatest Hits tape and just, like, tried to make it
the tape
all go
no
away.
Less.
Like, the tape. Yeah, like, no, definitely. That was, I mean, I wanted, and then even in high school, like, I mean, in vogue. I mean, like, I sang in vogue every second I had. You know what I mean? Just that I wanted to be, you know, a freaking soul singer from the 70s. It obviously wasn't going to happen. I'm a little white girl, but they definitely took in...
You can put some curls in your hair.
Exactly. But it definitely influenced the music that I write and that I love to sing. And sort of what I'm trying to do now, I mean, High Rises is interesting because I think each song is so clearly a different influence. You know, it's sort of me trying to find, you know, where who am I as a songwriter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to now to try to go that next step. We're playing a ton of new stuff on the road and sort of try to still take those influences, but to put them more, even more so in a song that's like, this is my own thing. You know, this isn't my Aretha ripoff song, you know, that this is my own thing. So, but still very much retaining those influences. So I think that's always a challenge as a songwriter. It's like really finding your own way and your own voice and that stuff, but not, you know, always going back to that well. And with somebody like Aretha Franklin or, you know, Lucinda Williams, I mean, the well is never going to go dry, you know. It's just super rich. So.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd actually like to ask you a little bit about Lucinda, because she's one of my personal favorites. Without a doubt, I think she's one of the greatest poets of her generation.
Totally.
Quite possibly the greatest in any genre.
We just got to go see her.
Did you?
Yeah, in Knoxville. It was the first time I got to see her.
Oh,
at
she's
this
amazing,
old theater,
isn't she?
The Bijou Theater. Oh my gosh, she's totally inspiring. You know,
she's coming to Cleveland this summer, and we're working on setting up an interview, which would be a dream.
Awesome.
So I will love that if it gets to happen.
Oh, totally.
But I definitely hear her influence in your writing.
Yeah.
You might not be as dark as she is sometimes.
Right.
It's pretty hard for anybody to be that dark and still be alive, which is one of the things that I love about her, is that she can channel those emotions so well. But that actually is one of the things that I see of her in you, is that ability to channel emotions.
Hmm.
And also, of course, the Southern writing and sort of just style of and all of that. But what do you think is the most influential part of her music and her writing on you?
I think that, when I was talking about that conversation with a friend who was sort of telling me, like, you need to quit talking about how you feel and start talking about what you see around you and let the emotions come through that. You know, like any good novelist does or whatever. But Lucinda is the person that he mentioned. He was talking about the song Concrete and Barbed Wire on, you know, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. He's like, you know, there's such a simplicity to her choruses of just like, she might just say concrete and barbed wire over and over and over, but like, damn, you know what she means, you know what I mean? And so I think that what I'm trying to take from her, not only is that poetry, but also I think that I can be very lyric heavy, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I would love to be able to do what like a soul or a gospel singer or like a Lucinda, like sort of blues-based singer does, which is take a really strong image and let that carry like a whole chorus. And I don't know that I've ever done that. You know, it takes, simplicity is like the hardest thing to achieve.
And we came out of the show, this is just a couple weeks ago, and we were both like, man, what she can do musically, even musically, it's just a simple idea, like dun, 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 dun,
yeah.
Dun. Like, that's it. And then she just starts singing.
Right.
Simple ideas, but powerful.
Totally. And she has the benefit of that growl, which is just like, she could say anything and it would sound badass. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, that is definitely on her side. But, I mean, but she's drawing from the blues, you know? And so there's, I think when you're drawing so heavily and she's so well-versed in that, you know, that sort of, you know, plethora of music that it just comes across so clearly in her music. I think the simplicity and the strength of what she does, and that she's not afraid to kind of be mean. Like, not afraid to sort of, like...
That kind of.
You know what I mean? Like, just tell like it is. And it's
right.
I think it's really refreshing to hear a woman do that, too, you know? Like, it's always... I don't know, it's just, it's really incredible the way that she does that. So I would like to try to just sort of work some of that in. Let go of the sort of like Southern you know, always be nice to everybody, always, never hurt anybody's feelings, which doesn't which may be great in life, but doesn't necessarily always work in art, you know.
Right.
So yeah, yeah, she's a great person to look to in a lot of ways for me, I think.
Well, I think, you know, one line that stands out to me, mm-hmm. In that respect, talking about her, is joy.
Yeah.
Like your refills out here?
No,
I'll take a little more lemonade, actually. More thank you very much.
Everybody else is good?
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Sorry, I'm thirsty.
No,
that was our lovely waitress. You know, just those lines about...
You took my joy.
Right. Well, more than that, you've got no right to take my joy.
Yeah, I want it back. Yeah.
You know, just hearing that from a woman in some ways is such an interesting feminist statement.
Totally.
You know, that she's got her own life and that, you know, she can do what she wants. And in your writing, I see some similarities, if maybe more toned down.
Right, right.
Thank you. Which, you know, brings me to the first song I'd like to ask you about, which was the first one that I heard.
Yeah.
And I told you the story a little earlier. The way I discovered you was through Pandora, listening to Sarah Jaros Radio. And you guys have some significant differences, but I guess you're similar enough, especially in this one song,
right,
that you popped up. And the song was Sparrow off of High Rises in Brooklyn. And I just think it's an amazing song. The lyrics are absolutely beautiful, and it's one of the most raw things that I think you've written, or at least that you've you know, put out there for the world.
Right, right.
And I know you said that you know, you were going through a breakup at the time, and I feel like that is sort of the encapsulation of your feelings at that moment.
Sometimes I feel like a sparrow sold for a penny or two, 'cause the road I travel was cleared by a fool and a thief and a charmer, they wrote the rules. Sometimes I feel like a sparrow, sometimes I feel like a whore who will sell it all for cheap if it's all that I've got, 'cause the girl's got to eat. Well, it ain't what I want, but it's all that I see. Sometimes I feel like a whore. So tell me, tell me, where do I go when I'm homesick for the place that never felt like home? And tell me, tell me,
so I was living in Williamsburg in Brooklyn in that same apartment, and gosh, I haven't even, you know, I was going through a breakup and going through those feelings of sort of like all that goes along with that, and I had a roommate at the time who kind of was as well, and another dear friend, and I think through the conversations that we were having, this sort of like images of something like a sparrow or a whore or a burden or an anchor, you know, all these things sort of started to come through. And I don't know, I wanted to sort of take the leap of writing something that sort of intense, you know. I think it was for me as a songwriter, it was kind of a leap to be able to be that raw. And I sort of, it was sort of a challenge to myself to sort of go there. But I don't even remember specifically like writing the song. I just remember sharing it with those two different women, you know, being like, and I think also there's that feeling of feeling, you know, there's also the themes of like longing for a home that you know, that home that doesn't, it never really felt like totally right, you know, which is Mississippi. Like, I'm always drawn there, and I love the people there, and there's something about the green and the space and the air, but like never quite felt like home, you know. And so there's all these imageries of this tension of what it feels like to be in that place that came through. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make one comparison here. I want to see if you agree with me. You know Casey Chambers?
I love Casey Chambers.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a great point in your favor.
Yeah.
In some ways, that song actually reminds me of I'm Not Pretty Enough.
Yeah. I used to cover that song.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I think you can see emotionally where I'm coming from on
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
And I'd be interested to know, you know, she has gone through a lot of changes in her life since then, as have you since you wrote that song.
Right, right.
And hopefully most of them for the positive in your case.
Yeah, I would say so.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
But she recently, when she came out with her newest album, Little Bird, basically did an answer song, which is the title track, which is sort of what she, in this place in her life, would say to the girl in that period of her life.
Yeah.
If you were going to talk to the girl who's writing Sparrow,
what
do you think you would say to her?
Wow, that is a great question.
That's why I do this professionally, my friend.
That is a really great question. And in fact, I feel like that I'm going to write that song now. And I'll have to be like, you know,
I won't
giving
have
you props on the album. Man, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, that is just like, I feel like you just planted the seed for like the answer that's going to have to come out. And like,
I think I've thought about that, but never actually put that together, you know, like when I've been listening.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what do you think now when you're singing it?
But you know what's interesting is that I feel like so many of these new songs are that. And and it's been why it's been kind of hard to write them, is because for so long I drew from that well of loneliness and from that well of, like, even sort of enjoying loneliness. Like, there's a level to which, you know, there is that person in New York City, which I'm sure is everywhere, you know, that sort of is like masochistically looking up for those relationships that are just gonna be terrible. You know what I mean? And
I think,
like,
I dated a few
of those. Exactly. And you're in the bar and there's a romanticism about it all, and you're in the city and you're walking home and you're, you know, and so, man, I really drew from that well and enjoyed it, you know, and you know, also it was totally shitty. But
it's that sick sort of basis that Lucinda has too,
yeah,
I think.
It's like, how can she still be writing these songs? But I think to start to make those choices in your life where you're saying, you know what, this is no longer working and I don't want to be in this place anymore, and actively seek out breaking those patterns. What's funny as an artist is to be like, how do I continue to write songs when I've sort of depended on this one way of writing? And so I think that's what we're trying to do all the time, you know. And I actually, you know what is interesting, this song, we just finished a song called Brighter Than the Blues, and the chorus, the last part of the chorus, well, the chorus says, a window opened up in time where I could see so clearly how bright your light shines, a light I hold so dearly, a light I can see now whenever I choose, a light that shines so much brighter than the blues. And it's that idea of something being more important than those blues that I loved so much, you know? And so I think in a way that's sort of a response. It's not a direct response, but this idea of something being more important than my own sort of melancholy that was driving all those songs, you know, and choosing light and choosing love over melancholy, and being able to write into that space as well, you know, which can be kind of scary, because if you're an artist who's dependent a lot on that and built a fan base out of that, to try new territory is an interesting thing, but is also a necessity, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
That's a great question, though. That's, yeah.
I just blew your mind, didn't I? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to ask you about a couple more songs real quick.
Yeah.
But I think this would be a good transition. I do want to ask Matt just a couple of things.
Yeah.
First of all, I know you guys have to run, so I don't have that much more, but let me know if you need to get out of here.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to make you late for your next show or anything. But, well, first of all, I have a couple more for you later, but just on that topic of, you know, you're going out with Kelly every single night and playing these songs, some of which are things that she wrote, you know, before you two knew each other, probably. Some of which are about, you know, boyfriends that she had before and how that ended and all that. I'm just interested to know, you know, personally, how some of that feels for you and what your feelings are, you know, jumping in on somebody else's music when you've got that sort of relationship.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty lyrically challenged in a lot of ways. I don't listen to lyrics as much as most people. I mean, I'm very aware of songs and what they're about, but I'm usually so intent on the music and trying to make, you know, the best song come out. So I'm thinking about rhythm and melody. The meaning of the songs can mean something different to everybody, so I don't really get too caught up on it.
Mm-hmm. And Matt comes from a place, it's interesting, like, musically, you know, of much more place of, like, rock and, you know, like old, you know, classic rock that I never listened to growing up. So it's interesting too, just musically, to start to have that balance a little more. Things become less and less precious, and it brings out this other place in some of the songs, which is really cool.
About me, and I can sing them, not even think about that, you know.
Gotcha.
Because we're just trying to perform this song and make it the best we can.
In fact, the other day, I said, the song we've been singing for a long time, I can't even remember what it is. And I was like, no, that's you. It's like, it's a nice song.
Really,
it's not like a mean song.
I mean,
and I was like, oh, I didn't know. I was like, well, who do you think it's about, you know?
The bottom line is songs can mean so much to everybody.
Right.
And we all have songs that we love that we're like, oh, it's about this. And then you read somewhere that it was about something completely different. So, you know, I don't put too much into it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think, you know, that's one of the beauties of music in general, is it's very interpretive.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and there's so many ways to go about it and think about it. Like, you can just be thinking, you can go through an entire song and just be thinking about, you know, the rhythm of the song and not even putting any interest at all or any mind space into what the lyrics are about. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to convey a rhythm, you know.
Gotcha. Okay, interesting. Well, I do have a little bit more that I want to ask you in a minute, but before that, I just want to ask about a couple more songs, and then we'll start wrapping it up here. In addition to Sparrow, which, like I said, I think is just absolutely amazing, you've got a number of other really great songs, but I think there's one that really, you know, stands the test, as especially being so early in your career, relatively. Mm-hmm. You know, just being one of the great songs that's ever been written, honestly.
Wow.
And that's Johnny Cash. I think, you know, it's just tremendously beautiful. Got that seed planted in your mind about his relationship with June, and, you know, why you decided to let that seed grow into the song that it did.
Well, you know, I was sort of talking a little bit about when I moved to New York City, thinking of it like as grad school for music. And part of what I started to do was listen to a lot of the old school country that I had never listened to that much growing up, like the Johnny Cash and the Carters and, you know, the Carter family and all that. So I think part of that began in that process of just listening to that music. And then, you know, I'd heard a bit about their relationship, and I was also always kind of fascinated by it. And this was before the movie or anything like that.
Right.
And then when, so she died about 4 or 5 months before he did. And everybody was really surprised because Johnny had always been in like such, you know, in and out of the hospital and that sort of thing. So, and so then when he passed away, it was about a week or two after he had died, and I was walking through Williamsburg near the East River, and at the time there were all these sort of abandoned warehouses that have now been turned into giant condos.
Right,
but
very
at the
cheap
time,
condos
yeah, exactly.
Too.
At the time, it was just really still a pretty abandoned area, and someone had written in, you know, spray paint, graffitied on the side of this building, like 30 feet long or something, "Johnny Cash died of a broken heart." And I just, like, stood there looking at it for a while and walked home and just knew, like, I have to write that song, you know? So the seed was definitely planted, obviously, there, since that's the first lyric of the song. And then...
Even with "They Say" right before,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is brilliant.
Yeah. And so then I was working, you know, at a... I was working as a receptionist at this place in Chinatown, and I was sent out on an errand to Staples or whatever. And a lot of the writing that I did in New York City would just be walking around. And I wrote it, like, on the way to Staples, you know, I think that probably that same week, you know. And it sort of came, I had written a short story.
Did you buy some extra envelopes and write it on the back of one while you were...
No, I think I just even had it in my head. I didn't even write it down, which is
wow.
Ridiculous. But I had written a short story somewhat, you know, close around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a character in it that I, you know, as I'm sure all of novels and short stories and songs all have a piece of us. It was like, you know, basically me as a little girl. And so it was like from her perspective, basically.
Okay.
Of this southern town. So it was just like a bunch of different things, but mainly the graffiti. And some pieces that were sort of already floating around.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's actually one of the more interesting story genesises of it. My line was bad. Whatever that I've ever heard.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm distracted because...
This song?
It drives me crazy. I love this song. It's a great song, but I hate when they edit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it's the whole point of the song.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what it's called.
Yes. Anyway, so, you know, obviously, you know, the graffiti struck you,
mm-hmm.
and you said that you knew a little bit about their relationship
mm-hmm.
before. I think, you know, if you read anything about the two of them,
yeah.
and the movie's out, but, you know, especially reading his biography and all that,
mm-hmm.
it's just such a classic, beautiful, strange
yeah.
relationship.
The more that I read about it, the more I was like, whoa, you know, like... The good, the highs and the lows and all that, yeah, it's pretty amazing, incredible love story, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you managed to encapsulate
yeah.
it beautifully, I have
well,
to say.
You.
So
thank you.
Well, thank you for writing it. Those are the two songs I really wanted to focus on.
Yeah.
I can mention a couple others, but which is your personal favorite composition? Would you say and you know how did you get to write that?
I mean, I definitely love those two songs, mainly because they speak to so many people, you know, especially touring. I mean, I've had so many people come up and tell me that Sparrow, you know, helped them articulate how they feel to someone they love, or, you know, which is always incredible. But I think the song that I enjoy performing the most these days is a song called Time, which is the first song on Never Be, on the first album.
Time will take the best of our bodies. don't let it take the rest. Time will take the best of our bodies, and time will take the best of our families. Time will take the best of our families. It'll take your wife, your son, but when it's said and done, may your time with them have really just begun. And there are hard times going around this city. I see them every day. There are hard times going around this city. They are heavy on your face. And though we're different London, still hoping we find love.
Night after night, they either start to fail you or they start to grow. And I think if they're strong songs, then like a Johnny Cash or a Sparrow, there's always something there that it's going to give you, you know. And time has just sort of grown and grown and grown and become its own thing, which is always, you know, a joy as a performer to have that there night after night. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Just wrapping up then, because I see you're looking at your watch, and I totally understand. I know. I'm so glad that you guys gave me as much time.
Somebody's got to be watching the clock here. He keeps us going.
That's cool. Well, you know, I told you, you know, one of the things that we really want to do on the website is dig as deep as possible.
I'm so glad that you guys
gave me this time, because I don't just want to have one of those interviews that says, you know,
the same thing that's already been said 100 times.
And I think we've really been able to get into some stuff, which is great.
Yeah, no, totally.
So please tell me this recording is working, because if I have to do this from memory, it looks like it still is. Anyway, just moving on into that, you know, I absolutely have to hear you guys play. It hurts me that I haven't yet. So, you know, one way or another, whether you can arrange a party here. I've been trying. Unfortunately, you saw my place.
Right.
There's no way we're getting people in there. But I've been trying to get some of my friends. And hopefully, as the site grows, you know, we do want to have a few concerts that we sponsor.
We would love that, man. We would totally love that.
I've got a great barn for you all.
Nice.
Yes.
We love that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the best. That's the best. So.
Well, I actually do want to ask you, you know, talking just a little bit about what you're doing now and going towards the future. I think this is one of the more interesting tours. You know, I spend a lot of my time dealing with, let's say, smaller bands, you know? And one of the things that I think is great that has really popped up a lot is, you know, the idea of the house concerts as a way to build things.
It is a huge difference maker. And, you know, it's something we talk about a lot with people, because it is new, and it's a thing that's gaining a ton of momentum everywhere. And we're trying, I mean, we live in a DIY world more than ever now, right? You want to do something, we're also well connected. Mm-hmm. We can do anything we want to do, to the point where we can book our own tour and we can do our own tour. And the reason why is the house show.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say it's 75% of the shows we do are house shows.
But we have a whole system now where we're trying to, you know, I don't know, get it down to a science, I guess I'd say, where, you know, present it to the people. This is what we do. You know, would you like to be a part of this?
Helping the host and helping ourselves make it the best possible experience.
Right.
So.
And you roll in. You know, you never know where you're rolling into. Which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're gonna meet, and you're gonna meet people. You're gonna hang out. You're gonna be able to play for, you know, as long as you really want to.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do whatever you want.
And you get to see. I mean, part of what I love about this tour more than anything is you just get to see places and meet people that you would never get to meet in any other scenario.
And
you know what I mean?
It's possible, because we'll be like, well, we have a show. Like, we played a venue last night in Pittsburgh, and we got a show in Chicago.
Yeah.
How can we get there?
Yeah.
And, you know, you could try to book venues, but
if you've never played a town before, you know.
But if you can do the house shows, you can play for, you know,
30 people that maybe, you never, so. That would never have come out to a venue,
and,
but because a fan is
time.
Hosting and they're like, no, really.
And especially with
come.
This music, more than anything, it really works because it's lyrically based. There's stories
acoustic.
To tell. There's stories to tell in between songs. And people want to know more about where did that song come from? What are you guys up to? What are you doing? How are you doing this? So it all goes together.
Yeah.
Very
and I love that, you know, this is how people used to listen to music all the time. It'd be like a Saturday night, like,
yeah, we
you know,
played,
who before the television, like, you come over and somebody's on the piano and somebody's, you know, like...
We played in...
I love that idea, and so we're kind of doing that.
We played in Connecticut, and we played for a woman who was in the folk scene in the 60s with Dylan and Joan Baez, and she was saying, and she hosted the house show. And she was saying, she hadn't done anything like this in such a long time, but, you know, back in that era, in New York City, everybody was going to each other's apartments and playing, and they would just pass the guitar around.
Yeah.
So
right.
to her, it was like, oh, this is a throwback.
This is,
this is the way it used to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even going back a little bit farther than that, you know, I personally love Woody Guthrie.
Yeah.
He's my all-time favorite. And the stories about... the Almanac House, and when he and Pete Seeger and Lee Hayes and all those guys were all living together in the village, and they couldn't pay their rent, so they would just hold hootenannies.
Yeah.
Just invite all their friends over, put a hat out, and just play all night long.
That's what we're doing, man.
Exactly. Well, you know, those are the guys that started it, you know? Like,
show.
Absolutely. Like, I think, you know, so much of what we think of as, you know, being reinvented now, we're really started by those guys.
Well, and a great thing, too, is that you roll into places where people don't really know their neighbors, and the neighbors will come out to see what's going on.
Right. They hear the music, they're like,
we've met.
All of a sudden, there's a community there where, you know, or at least an expanded community where there wasn't before, and
people,
that's really cool.
People are starving for that in certain places. Like,
right.
in New York, that's why we love New York, and people, like, and people from back home, because, you know, no one's really from New York, people will say, well, how do you live in New York? It's a crazy city, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, it's a crazy city, but here's why. And here's why, it's because you have this sense of community throughout the entire city.
Right.
Everybody's just well connected. So you roll into a place like Memphis, Tennessee or something, where people are really wanting to redevelop the downtown, and they want to bring in artists, and they want to have their friends come over. Well, this is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lived in a building in Spanish Harlem for like a year and a half and never met any of my neighbors.
Yep.
And then the blackout happens. And that's
when
we all
got
together.
Because
we're all sitting on the front stoop.
Totally.
And I had an antique gas lamp, oddly enough. And I just filled it up with kerosene, and we were all just sitting there.
That's awesome.
There was a party down in the projects. They had the boomboxes out.
Absolutely.
And that's the first time any of us ever really... Like, I knew the guy in the bottom floor who'd been in that building for literally 25 years.
Yeah.
And he was the only one I'd ever met. We met all the other neighbors that day. And
that's exactly...
It's the same kind of crazy experience.
Same thing.
That's
like,
the spirit we
want
to try to, like, rekindle everywhere.
Well, what
you
need
know?
To do
it's
is
like...
knock out the power on the entire Eastern Seaboard.
That's an idea. We can get more people on the house show if we just...
Interestingly enough... That power outage started just right out back here. It was very, Walton Hills is where the power blew originally.
Oh, wow.
So, in my grandmother's backyard. Not literally, but pretty darn close.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can
so
play
we can blame
Northeastern
you,
Ohio
basically.
For yes. Well, I had to walk home about 130 blocks that day and my shoe broke. So I blame people too, but it was all good.
Wow.
So finishing up real quick here, This tour is amazing, and I just want to ask a little bit about the genesis for it. First of all, Matt, you have a sort of a second billing in addition to guitar player, which is...
How do you know about this? Nobody knows about this.
I know everything.
Your secrets.
Oh, okay. Do we not want to talk?
No.
I have or had, I'm not sure which. I guess I have.
Oh, wait, no. Are you talking about... I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I'm not sure what I'm talking about, too.
Well, he's...
Tell me absolutely everything about yourself. And somewhere in there...
I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but okay. In New York I had a small shop. I had a metal shop. Is that what you're talking about?
No, but no. That's interesting,
yeah.
Too.
Okay. Yeah, I was building props for theater and TV a little bit. Electromechanical machines and devices.
Which comes into handy when the van breaks down.
I could bet. You ever do anything musically, building your own guitars or anything like that?
No, that's a good question. That was something that was talked about a lot. My buddy Kevin, who helped me run the shop and still does run the shop, he's into sound art, so we talked about building some instruments, but it hasn't happened yet. Maybe someday. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
There's actually a really cool thing, Lemur Bots. Started in New York, they were in Brooklyn, and they moved out to Pittsburgh, and they build all these crazy machines, instruments.
Interactive instruments. Like,
yeah, it's MIDI-controlled instruments. But they're like they have a guitar bot, so it's this machine with a fret that moves up and down by a motor on the string. There's four different strings, and they had like Patton Feeney come in and play it. He did a whole album using these instruments.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it's all been about.
Well, there's always room.
There's always room. There's lots of room in that world.
Exactly.
Come up with a crazy idea.
Well, that's awesome. Maybe you know,
like that,
if you get some time off the road, there'll be something you can play around with. Then you know she can learn how to drive better and just go on her own, and you can
or learn how to drive the van at
maybe
all.
Maybe we can build a robot that drives.
Oh, that too.
We'd probably do
to
better
to
than
do
me
is
driving.
Do some shows in San Francisco and get in good with the Mythbusters. So they can teach
you
all
go.
About that.
There you go. That's kind of what you guys were up to.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But no, actually, where I was going with that, although that was a great story, I'm glad we got it worked in, is sort of the relationship between the two of you. As far as, you know, how did you guys meet and how did you decide to start playing music together?
I met Kelly at a show at
Pete's Candy Store
in
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And then we started dating when I was in Chicago recording High Rises in Brooklyn. I was there for about a month. And then we got married.
That was the billing I was referring to.
There's that one too, yeah.
Yeah, band driver, husband, guitarist.
There you go. So you've got a lot of jobs, you know?
A lot of jobs. As it should be on the road. We both have a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, did you guys start playing together first, or did you start dating first?
We actually didn't play shows
together at all until after we decided to do this. So, like, last summer...
I was always doing my thing.
And he would sort of produce demos for me. We would definitely play together.
We always played in the living room together.
But we'd never done a show together.
So and Kelly had a band, and Kelly was doing... She was... recording her second album when that matters, so she was always.
So, but then once we decided, like, hey, let's get rid of the apartment and see how much music we can play, and we started doing shows together last fall, and so when we hit the road, I mean, we were like, it's kind of like a brand new band hitting the road, So it's been awesome to kind of just play show after show and get better and better and have it grow into sort of more and more of a cohesive kind of thing. And writing together more, and like I said earlier, Matt's coming from like a musically a pretty different place, so it's been an awesome balance for me to bring in some of those influences, and vice versa. Hopefully, so it's been fun.
Awesome.
Really fun. Yeah.
Well, I think the way that you're doing this has really been incredibly brave, and I have to give you guys props for that.
Thank you.
I think. Anybody who goes out on a limb for their art is absolutely amazing, especially since, it sounds like you had a pretty solid gig at the time. And
it is fun. I don't know if anything's solid in that city.
Okay, well, that's true.
New York and solid don't really go together.
Unless you got a ton of money.
I mean, well, we've been doing crazy stuff for a long time, so for us, it's like,
just making it
let's
work.
Go hit the streets and play music for a while.
And it was funny because the more that we decided to sort of go in further in terms of like, no, let's live in the van, and no, let's sell everything that we own, and let's not have an end date, the more fun it got, and the more the crazy stuff started to happen, like the True Lemon thing, or we get this American Airlines thing. It's like once we actually just had jumped off the cliff, like the parachute landed on our back kind of thing, And so I think there is something to that, when you really decide to step out into something that you really love, that you know, things can come along that, yeah. And we've just encountered so many generous people. Yeah, I mean, I had been building this network for 7 years. So, you know, we'll meet kids along the way. We're like, oh, I want to live in a van. I want to do it tomorrow. And we're like, yeah, well, except that, you know.
Yeah.
There are a few accepts there.
I told you, I know from my own personal experience. It's not quite as, you know.
But we've also met a lot of people that are in similar situations.
Absolutely. And making it work. That's totally inspiring. Road, yeah. You
know, right.
6 years in or whatever, and you're like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm sure if anybody can make it, you guys can.
Thank you.
And let me give you a tip. When you finally make it out to the Pacific Oceans, make sure you wear your flip-flops, but the showers at the Santa Monica Pier actually aren't that bad. So, right. It's a great place to stay, right by the beach. There you go.
I like that.
Thanks.
No problem.
Cool.
So just to finish out, we talked about what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future hold? I mean, I know you said you've been writing some new songs that you're playing out, mm-hmm. but it has been a while since your last album came out. Are you looking to get into the studio anytime soon? And what else do you have in the...
So I sort of promised myself the last time I recorded and toured that if I had the chance, I wanted to tour with the songs before I recorded them. Just because inevitably you get to the end of a tour and you're like, oh, okay, that's how I'd record that song, you know. So it's been a real privilege to be able to work these songs out. So I'm hoping when we land somewhere at some point, you know, that, and hopefully not, you know, too far away to start recording that third album. Which I'm also hoping will be much more a representation of the live show. That's the plan. And then I want to just try to keep touring as much as possible and see the world. That's the plan.
Gotcha. Take the van, ship it to Europe.
Yeah, go there why next. Not? You know?
I like the look on his face. I have to drive in the left-hand side of the road.
We can put skis on it and just kind of like go across the water.
That could work. I mean, man, those VW vans are amazing. Those things could do just about anything.
Man.
I bet you if you call them, they probably have the attachment.
I bet you YouTube this, some guy has made into a submarine.
I would not doubt it. You can find anything on the internet these days.
Awesome.
Well, that's about all that I have. Is there anything that either the two of you want to say to wrap it up? Any shows you want to promote? Anything interesting coming up?
We have a show in Chicago on Thursday, June 30th at Martyrs.
I think the biggest thing is if anyone's interested in house shows,
absolutely.
It's all on the website.
I'm always booking all across the country. So if you want to host a house
backyard
show.
Backyard parties.
Yeah. Living rooms, porches.
Everything.
So just let me know.
Awesome. Well, we will put up a link as well so that hopefully folks will read this and get really interested and love you guys as much as I do.
Awesome.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
To find out more about Kelly McRae, the great VW camper van Live True Tour, or to stream some of her music, visit www.kellymcrae.com. That's www.kellymcrae.com. This has been a Burning River Fireside Chat with your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. No Surf Music, http://nosurfmusic.com.